Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Blog Talk Radio.
This special episode of The Change Agent's Dilemma is a replay of the free teleclass I hosted last week. Enjoy!
Hello and welcome to the 10 Ways Change Gets Stuck teleclass. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, and I'm calling from Atlanta, Georgia. And this class is one of the many ways I help equip individuals to lead organizational change at Enclaria. Today I wanted to share 10 things to watch out for so your change doesn't lose traction. And then I'll share some exciting news about a practical new change guide that will help you avoid getting stuck. So what do I mean by getting stuck? You know, I work all the time with individuals in coaching, and also I do workshops with project teams that are trying to implement change. And the conversation really is either, you know, people call me because they are stuck and they need to get unstuck, their change is stuck, or they themselves, can't figure out what to do next to get their change moving, to get their organization moving. Or I do workshops where I help groups of people figure out what to do so they don't get stuck, you know, plan ahead so that they can reduce the chances that they're going to get stuck at some point along the way. So what happens when you get stuck, there's two things. First of all, it affects your organization. If your change gets stuck while you're in the middle of implementing it, either you revert back to the status quo. Sometimes you're in limbo. You know, it's like partially implemented, and then it gets stuck, and you wonder, okay, what am I going to do next? Sometimes it just feels like it's spinning its wheels and not really going anywhere. And then there's the effect that it has on you yourself as you're trying to implement change. Excuse me. I hear often people say things like, I just feel like I'm swimming upstream. You know, that feeling of being the salmon in the water trying to swim upstream, and you've got this incredible current washing against you, right? You know, I hear people say, I feel like I'm banging my head against the wall trying to get this done. I feel like I'm pushing the boulder uphill is one I like to use. And so this feeling of frustration and stuckness as you're trying to implement change is something that, you know, obviously if we could, we would try to avoid it. So I thought it would be useful to compile some common ways that change gets stuck and share it with you all today. And especially talk about what is it that change agents do or don't do that can get their initiative in that situation. So I've got 10 that I want to go through today, and these aren't really in any particular order as far as, you know, number one is not the one that happens the most often or the most important or anything like that. Some of these are going to be things that you know, they're obvious. And we'll talk a little bit about, you know, what are some of the things that happen, sort of underneath them. And then some, I think, will be brand new. And so my hope is that today, anyone who's listening will get at least one thing that is an aha moment, like, oh, that's what I should be working on if you are stuck yourself, or, oh, that's what I need to watch out for, that's going to happen here. Okay, sound good? I listen to everybody who's muted. So number one is getting off to a false start. And it's really easy to do that because as change agents, we kind of want to avoid the status quo and not pay too much attention to it. We get really excited about the project that we're trying to implement, and we just want to start implementing it. And, you know, we kind of treat the status quo like the enemy to be vanquished instead of a resource to be used to find out what do we really need to be doing here. And you skip the part of understanding where you are now. You know, when you're in the mall and you're trying to get to a certain store and you're looking at that big guide, you know, unless you know where that dot is that says you are here, you don't really know how to get to where you're going, right? It's the same kind of idea. And so as an example, one of my clients right now is the head of HR in a large department in her organization. And she contacted me because her implementation was stuck. They implemented an HRIS system to get rid of all the paper systems that they had. And so they implemented the system, came up with the new processes as they should be, and people started using them, and it looked like it was going okay until she started to find out that people were using what she called shadow systems. And so people were still using the paper underneath and then just entering the information into the system. Well, the whole point of having the system was to get rid of the extra work involved, right? So then they ended up doubling all the work. So without really looking at what to leave behind, you know, looking at the organization as it is, and then seeing, okay, well, what is it that we want to make sure we stop doing? If you don't do that, then you can easily get ahead of yourself, get off to a false start, and end up implementing something that, you know, there's still undercurrents of the old way in there. And so a solution would be to commit to understanding the organization as it is now before you actually start figuring out, well, what does the future look like? So that's number one, which I call getting off to a false start. Number two is aiming for the change instead of the vision. And this is best explained as another example. And this is something that I learned firsthand myself. A number of years ago, I was responsible for process improvement in the organization that I worked for. And one of the initiatives that I was in charge of was a suggestion box, a combination of a suggestion box to gather ideas and then a process improvement team initiative to implement the ideas that came through that suggestion box. And so I gathered a team together. We implemented it. We had it going for about 18 months, had successes, and we were on autopilot at that point and said, well, now what? People outside of our little group, you know, some of the leaders were trying to say, well, now what? You know, is this group going to just keep meeting in perpetuity? And so what happened was we were aiming for the change, which was the initiative itself, as our goal, like just implementing what the change was, instead of actually changing the organization. And so, you know, if you can get caught in the middle, get stuck there, if you are aiming mainly at your initiative as the sole focus, instead of looking at, well, how do we want the organization to change? And as soon as we started to figure out that we had done that, we started looking at, okay, well, what were we really aiming for here? It was really to get innovative ideas from employees and then have them start creating process improvement teams around those. How can we embed that further into the organization? And so then we started talking to have managers implementing it themselves, and we were able to disband our steering committee that we had started and have the managers take over as part of their day-to-day job. So if you are aiming at the change and not at your future vision, you can get stuck in just, you implement the change and you just get stuck there. So that's number two. And number three is only scratching the surface. And, you know, a lot of times we implement changes that it looks from the surface like it's a process change, but really it's a culture change, it's a mindset change. It goes a lot deeper and affects more of the organization than we originally thought. So if you only try to change what appears to need to change, you're going to be left wondering, why isn't this working? Why is this stuck? If you don't understand the real transitions that are involved in the change. And I have the personal belief that unless it's something really small, like you're just tweaking a part of a process, you know, every change is a culture change. Because culture is the way we do things around here. And if you're changing a process or something like that, you're still changing the way we do things around here. There's usually some component of behaviors and mindsets that's involved in changing even something as simple as what it looks like. What it looks like is as simple as a process. An example where I see this a lot is in lean manufacturing or Six Sigma or even balanced scorecards, some kind of initiative that is sort of a change in philosophy. So, for example, lean manufacturing, you know, for almost 100 years, people in manufacturing had been sort of stuck in this idea of the Henry Ford system of, you know, let's try to take each component down to and make it efficient among themselves and try to just push as much output as possible through the system. Well, then, you know, lean comes around, and it's more about, well, we're not going to just try to get as much through the system as we can. We're going to make it only when our customers need it instead of just making loads and loads and loads of product and try to reduce waste and all that. And so it's a total mindset shift from the way that we, especially in America, think that business should be done, the manufacturing should be done. And so, you know, I've talked to people who have tried to implement Lean or Six Sigma, something like that, and they just say, well, people don't understand. This is way more than just the process that we're trying to tweak. It's a complete mindset shift. And so if you've been trying to implement a change that, you know, on the surface it looks like it would be easy, then there's probably something going on if it's getting stuck that is much goes below the surface and is much deeper than that. And so something that you have to ask yourself if the underlying issue doesn't change is your initiative going to survive? Because if it's not, then you either need to change it or you need to shift your tactics and maybe even drop the initiative altogether if it's going to be stuck if the underlying organization doesn't change. So number three, only scratching the surface. Number four, I'm calling overcoming resistance. If you are trying to overcome resistance, you're going to get stuck. And it's the terminology. You know, overcoming means, you know, it's a matter of force, it's a matter of willpower. But just based on the laws of physics, every action has an equal and opposite reaction. You know, the harder you push against something, the harder it pushes back. And so instead, resistance is something that you need to understand, something you need to work with, something you need to build from. And only then can you actually reduce it, you know, deal with it, and figure out how to get beyond it. And a lot of times, people try to deal with the symptoms of resistance, things like procrastination. Some people sort of lay low and wait for it to pass by. Some people just go rogue. It's like, well, yeah, I know you told me to do it that way, but I don't want to do it that way, and I'm going to do it this way. But there's a lot of different symptoms of resistance, people, ways that people express resistance, and we deal with that. You know, if somebody's procrastinating, we might, you know, they're like, well, why aren't they doing what I, you know, why aren't they doing the task that they said that they would do even? And we might nag them, we might try to get their boss involved, and all kinds of things that are just going to make them madder or, you know, dig their heels in more. But if you actually understand why is it that that person's not doing what you expected them to do, then you can start to deal with it. So, for example, one time I talked to a manager in the Atlanta area who there were offices, it was a nonprofit organization that had offices in multiple counties in the area. And he had a monthly meeting, I think it was monthly meeting, where everybody was supposed to come and talk about that topic. And there was one person that never came for like, when I asked him, he said, yeah, it's been like 2 years and she's never come to my meeting. And I was like, well, that, you know, that's kind of weird. And considering she knows how important this is, right? And he said, well, I think so. And so as we were working together to dig through it, to figure out, well, what is it, why isn't she coming to your meeting? Just even something as simple as that, you know, if she's not there, you can't do what you need to do. So he started digging under it, and it turned out that it was her boss. It wasn't even her at all. It was her boss who told her not to go to the meeting. So you never know until you start digging under the symptoms of resistance to the source of resistance, what you're going to find that can help you to figure out how to move somebody forward if they're digging in their heels somehow. So number four, overcoming resistance. Number five is not going to be a surprise to anybody. The number five way that change gets stuck is a lack of visible, consistent leadership support. I can hear you guys, even though you're muted. Of course, the fact that leadership is important to change is at this point a no-brainer. I think everybody knows that that you need leadership involvement, leadership support in order to make change happen. I'm personally not of the belief that change has to start from the top, but I think that they do need to support it visibly and consistently in order for change to happen. And a lot of times you see leaders who are not walking the talk, you know, we hear that a lot, or just, you know, doing things that you kind of look, you're kind of puzzled, like, why? Shouldn't they know that they need to do this and not that? Because when leaders are not visible in their support, when they're not consistent and aligned across each other, it sends the message that this change is not important, or that it's that people are confused. So why should I get on board if they're not sure exactly what we're doing? You know, people who work for these leaders, they don't want to waste their time on something that's not going to happen, and especially not on something that their manager or their manager's manager doesn't support. So as an example, I have a client who works for a nonprofit organization, a different nonprofit than the one that I just talked about. And she's responsible for implementing a nationwide initiative. And she called me because it was pretty clear she was in limbo. There was a lot of changes at the top, and none of the leaders in the organization really owned her initiative. She was just sort of on an island, and she was having difficulty getting people to cooperate with her, trouble getting funding, and really it just seemed like this was going nowhere fast. And so she called me, and we went through one of the processes that I've developed to figure out how to get leadership on board. And one culprit is not having clear roles of who's doing what during change, especially if there's a change agent like you involved and there's a leader, and there's a question of, well, who's responsible for doing what? Who's really owning this? What pieces do we need to each do? And what is the relationship between you? That's a big area that I see usually needs improvement. And sometimes, honestly, the leader's just clueless. And by that, I mean, respectfully clueless. What I mean is that they just don't know that they're not doing what they need to do, because they're in their own world trying to succeed at what their department is responsible for, and so they're just not aware of it. And so what I see is that because of the authority, the imbalance in authority between leaders and change agents, there's often a reluctance to talk to the leader about what they need to do or what you're seeing them do that may not be helping the change, you're either unwilling to do it because you're afraid that something bad's going to happen. Sometimes you think it's not your place, since they might not even be your boss, or even if they are, you may feel like it's not your place to say something. Or you may even just think that they're not changeable, like that's just the way they are. And my only question is, well, if not you, then who? If you're the one who sees it and it's your change, then if leaders aren't supporting it and they need to, then something needs to be done. And so number five is a lack of visible, consistent leadership support. Number six is allowing excuses. So if you or the organization or leaders, whoever, are letting people getting away with not participating, not changing, not doing what they need to do, then your change is going to get stuck. If there's no accountability or little accountability, then that's the problem. you know, if it's okay to, for people to make excuses. You know, I don't have enough time. I'm busy. Well, there's not enough money. It's someone else's fault. You know, that's why I love it when people blame the customers. Or even uncontrollable circumstances. I worked for a company that all the time we blamed the weather for not having enough sales, for example. So, you know, if people are allowed to make excuses for not implementing a new change, then, like I said, if you're just spinning your wheels, because if people are allowed to make excuses, then they will if they don't do what's expected. So there's two pieces of that. There's the setting expectations part, and then there's if you're not defining and maintaining accountability, you know, and accountability is one of those things that nobody wants to talk about, or everybody wants to hold everybody else accountable, but not themselves, and so that's why it ends up being something that you can't talk about. I hear somebody's phone ringing. If you could put yourself on mute, I'd appreciate that. I see it a lot in balanced scorecard implementations. Accountability really becomes an issue because a balanced scorecard is all about accountability. balanced scorecard is a system of measurement that has grown beyond that. It's more like a management system around how do you execute strategy, how do you measure, how do you execute your strategy. And balanced scorecard implementations really require a shift in accountability. And what happens is if the people in the room who are looking at the measurements and, you know, they're supposed to be holding each other accountable and holding themselves accountable for achieving the targets, but instead they start fighting over whether or not the measure is actually correct and spend most of their time arguing over or making excuses for why their measure isn't where it is instead of actually coming up with solutions to make it better. So change gets stuck when no one wants to commit to achieving results or holding each other or themselves accountable. Number six. Number seven is another one that's not going to be a surprise to anyone. Inadequate or inconsistent communication. And it's not just a matter of that you're not doing enough communication, although that happens a lot. In fact, I recently had a conversation with a CEO who got frustrated because he was wondering why no one was doing what he asked when he sent out one email. And so I was explaining to him that, you know, people are busy. Even though you're the CEO, it still takes more than one email to get people to respond. And so, sometimes that's the issue, is that there's not enough communication or people don't believe that less communication will do the job. But it's also about not getting the right message to the right person so that they actually do something about it. And sometimes, you know, I've heard the term, you need to communicate seven times seven ways, seven times seven different ways. And but that just sounds like you're trying to, you know, do the fire hose kind of thing. You just just throwing so much communication at them that they can't dodge it, you know. But if you do that, that's still, I mean, that's a lot of work, first of all, and it's also just, you know, like I said, it's a fire hose instead of, you know, trying to figure out who needs what message. And I also see people who are more reactive with the communication, and, you know, instead of basically having no plan for communication, just knowing that they need to do it, and then the way that it happens is you're either reactive to what's happening, or it's just you remember, oh yeah, I need to send this out, or I need to tell people this. And so, if you don't have a communication plan when you're implementing change, especially to a large group of people, a large organization, you're already underwater. You're either not going to communicate enough, because it takes planning to communicate enough for change. And you're also going to get inconsistent messaging or reactive messaging just based on what happens. And so what happens if you don't have enough communication, or you're missing your target with your communication, or communication is inconsistent, is you're not going to gain the attention of the people that you need, and people are busy, and I know that it's hard to break through all the other things that people are doing. Or people end up going in different directions because they're understanding things differently, or they're hearing different messages, or they just wait it out because they're confused. So that's another way that things get stuck. Number 8, death by meeting. Death by meeting. So have you ever had a project where you met every single week but nothing ever seemed to happen? It's just sort of on autopilot. You schedule a meeting to happen in Outlook or whatever every week, and so people show up, and there may or may not be an agenda, or the agenda that is there, it's the same agenda every week because nothing is getting done. People aren't marking off their tasks. They're just getting moved from week to week. And, meetings already get a bad rap anyway because, the whole thing, I didn't get any work done today because I was in meetings all day, right? And so people just get sick of that. If you're not making progress in your meetings, then you need to stop having meetings and figure out how you're going to make progress in them before you meet again. Meetings, because they are where everybody gathers under the guise of making progress, they're the reflection of your change for the people who are participating in it. They're the experience of change for a lot of people. And if you're supposed to be getting together to collaborate, but if you're just going through the motions, or if people aren't doing what they need to do, then it's going to reflect badly on your change initiative, and people are going to lose interest. They may stop coming. Maybe they'll start scheduling other things that they think are more important, and eventually it just sort of fizzles out. Or it just keeps going and going, and you're wasting everybody's time, and nothing ever is happening. So, there's a lot of reasons that meetings are ineffective. Sometimes it's the wrong people in the room. Either maybe you have too many. Some people get invited just because you don't want to hurt their feelings. Or you don't have enough people because everybody's busy and they don't show up. Or it could be the wrong people if you have a meeting where you need to make a decision, and the person who can veto that decision is not in the room, then probably that's going to be a waste of time. Meetings go badly when you have the wrong conversation. The thing that you really need to talk about, nobody's talking about, which I'll get into in a minute. Bad decisions. If you've got somebody, a leader, let's say, who is sort of dominating the conversation, they're making a decision, but nobody ever actually is buying into it. That's another reason that meetings fail. And even the wrong type of meeting. If you're having a brainstorming session, let's say, but everybody's got their judgment hat on and knocking down everybody's ideas, then chances are you're not going to get a lot of ideas. So there's a lot of reasons that meetings go badly. Usually it's those things that I talked about, but also lack of planning ahead of time and thinking through what is it exactly that this meeting needs to accomplish and how are we going to get that done. So death by meeting. Number 9 is what needs to be discussed isn't. And we all have in our organization things that are undiscussable. There's things that really need to be discussed, and nobody wants to stick their head up to actually discuss them. And some of these things are feedback to leaders, especially. Trying to get support is another one. You don't necessarily want to speak up because you don't want to be told no, that kind of idea. Understanding resistance, if somebody's doing something and you don't know why, if they're resisting change and you don't know why, it could be a difficult conversation to start to try to figure that out without feeling like you're blaming them. And assigning roles and accountability within change is another thing that needs to be discussed but often isn't. And problems just linger because you can't fix what no one will admit exists. I'll say that again. You can't fix what no one will admit exists. If you have a problem and nobody's talking about it, then it's not a problem, even though it is. You know what I mean? So until you can shine a light on it, nothing's going to happen, and your change is going to be stuck until that actually gets addressed. And so the cycle will just keep continuing until someone is able to point it out. And this is really, if there's one thing on this list that if you, if you could do, if there's one thing you could do as a change agent, if there's one thing you could be good at, it's this. It's having conversations that nobody else is going to have. Because if you can do that skillfully, then, I mean, really, you're just a rock star. And this is one of the main things when I do coaching with change agents, this is probably the top thing that I work with people on, is having conversations with individuals, usually leaders, about how to get done what they need to get done. And so if you can do that, and also, and going back to death by meeting, if you can be the person who can bring up the conversation, that, you know, the 800-pound gorilla in the room without getting your head chopped off, or even with getting your head chopped off, sometimes you just have to go for it. It's usually not as bad as you think. But if you can be that person, then you can really be viewed and be the one who gets change done. So number 9 is what needs to be discussed isn't. And number 10 is you've reached the limit of your influence as a change agent. You know, if you're the one who's driving a certain project, a certain change, and you sort of reach the edge of your bubble, the limit of the organization that you touch directly, then it can get stuck there. You know, if you do something within your own department but that's the limit of your influence, then unless you find a way to expand that, it's going to get stuck there. It'll just never go beyond whatever your scope is. And even just last week, I was talking to a project manager who said to me, well, there's only so much I can do. You know, she was talking about that there were politics in her organization because she was a few layers down from the top. There are politics in my company that I don't even know about, you know, relationships I don't even know about. There's only so much I can do, and that reflects what this issue is. There's only so much that you can do within your own span of influence. And so, but there are ways that you can increase your influence, and a lot of times it's sort of self-imposed limits. Like you think that that's outside of the span of your influence, but it's really not if you would just take that step outside of your box. You know, I had another client who was a sustainability manager for a manufacturing company, and she was stuck in that box. Her sustainability was sort of outside of everybody else, and she needed a way to move it more into the organization. You know, move it from outside of the company. It was more like a side project. It was just sort of her thing. And she needed it to become everybody's thing. And so that's one of the things that we worked on together is how does she expand, who can she enlist to help, which leaders does she need to get involved, how can she increase her own visibility so people know who she is and can involve her in things when they're talking about sustainability. And especially how do we boost her confidence in who she was and her capabilities. And that way, you know, I think that has a lot to do with influence. Confidence has a lot to do with influence, and that's what I've seen in my experience with coaching change agents as well, is that if you can gain clarity about what you're trying to do, that boosts your confidence, and then that confidence expands your opportunities. So that's number 10. You've reached the limit of your influence. So I'm just going to read those 10 in case anybody's taking notes and wants to make sure they've got them all. It's really quick. Number 1, getting off to a false start. Number 2, aiming at the change instead of the vision. Number 3, only scratching the surface. Number 4, overcoming resistance. Number 5, a lack of leadership support. Number 6, allowing excuses. Number 7, inadequate communication. Number 8, death by meeting. Number 9, what needs to be discussed isn't. And number 10, reaching the limit of your influence. And so I know a lot of people are on mute right now, but I'd like to invite you to unmute yourself if you had any questions about those, or if you wanted to add one, if you think, well, why didn't you say this? I would love to hear that. So, because I'm not saying that these are the only 10. These are just some of the 10 ways that change gets stuck. So I'll open it up if anyone has any questions. Comments? Aha moments?
Heather?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know if I was off mute for sure or not. I have a question. So, you know, there's all these reasons why we get stuck. Do you find that now that you know more about change, it's easier to, like, is it kind of common across lots of different kinds of change initiatives, or are these, or is it dependent on what kind of change is happening?
I think these are fairly common to most changes. There are some that will probably have more higher degrees of issues, like with what was my example on with lean manufacturing, or like some kind of broad a broad initiative that has a really deep mindset change. You're going to have maybe a harder time with that, or that it goes deeper than some others, but there's still that issue of there's probably something underneath your change, underneath the surface change that needs work, that's preventing you from moving forward. And I think it might just go deeper on some initiatives than others, for example.
So when you look at different change initiatives, you can kind of start spotting these things? In a general sense.
Yeah. So, if you could get a guide that would walk you step by step to avoid all of these ways of getting stuck, that would be pretty awesome, right? I hear cheering behind the muted. Behind the muted. So I'm really excited about this new change guide that is officially launching today. And the main title is called Irresistible. And it's the Change Agent's Guide to Design and Influence Change Without Getting Stuck. And it's a complete workbook with more than 20 templates to help you figure it all out. And each of these ways that change gets stuck is included in there. So we start by clarifying the change, talking about where you're going to start, what's the real vision, and how you scratch below the surface to figure out what really needs to change. And then uncovering resistance, and really the section I have on resistance is, like, you would get the book for that, because it's just so, I've walked through this process with so many change agents that just have, you know, the bells are going off, like, oh my gosh, that is the problem. I know now what I need to do. And then we start figuring out, specifically looking at leadership, and what are the roles in relationships, and how are you going to get the support you need, and what does that support look like? And then within this guide, we start looking at designing the tools, the systems, the processes. We take a really deep look at accountability. How do you design accountability into your organization, especially around your change? And how are you going to communicate your change? Specifically, how are you going to pinpoint what messages need to go to the people that need to hear them? And then what really makes this change guide unique is that I have a whole section about personal influence. Because there's so much, you know, when you look at all the change books that are out there, it's usually about theory. There are some examples, but I hear people over and over say, okay, well, that's nice, but how do I do this in my own organization? How do I do it myself? Because I'm just me. And so I have a whole section about how do you boost your influence? How do you increase your power in your organization? How do you have those conversations that you really don't want to have but you need to have? And also, how do you facilitate meetings? How do you plan for meetings to make them not a waste of everybody's time? And so, like I said, this is a workbook. It has more than 20 templates that I also have in PDF and some of those in PowerPoint templates, so you can actually get your team together to work on these together. And also an audio interview with me that's called How to Be an Irresistible Change Agent. That's a 30-minute audio that's also included. I also am having a webinar called Design and Influence Irresistible Change. That's coming up on May 15th, and anyone who buys this change guide between now and the webinar, basically, gets a free ticket to attend, and so you can be at that event live. So all of that, and the regular price is $249, but if you order by May 15th, you actually can get this for the early bird rate and save 30%, and you pay only $175. And get to attend that webinar. Now, I do have a special deal, starting, you guys are the first to hear this, as the people who are attending the teleclass. The next five people who use the code UNSTUCK, 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 will save 40% instead of 30%, so your investment will only be $149 to get the workbook, the templates, the audio, the webinar. And all you have to do is go to enclaria.com, that's enclaria.com/irresistible change guide, all one word, irresistible change guide. Or, you know, you could just go to enclaria.com if you don't want to type all that out, enclaria.com, and follow the links to change guides. And that'll get you there, too. Well, again, I'm really excited about this new change guide. These are all methods, really, that I developed alongside by working with clients. These are the things that work. These are the things that help you figure out exactly, okay, what do I need to do in order to make this happen? And so it's specifically written for change agents, not for, like, CEOs. But the people who are in the trenches trying to make change happen. And I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to help a lot of people. And that's the whole reason that I have this company, is to help people who are change agents make a difference in their organizations. And so I thank you for attending. I appreciate your time and your listening. And, again, you can find the Irresistible Change Guide and more resources to help you influence change in your organization at enclaria.com. Take care, and may your change be truly irresistible.
Thanks, Heather.
Thank you.
With 25% off all new and up to 70% off previously leased furnishings, do you really need a better reason to party? We don't think so. Come visit our new Court Furniture Clearance Center with more than 9,000 square feet of new and previously leased furniture and decor for your home and office. Sofas from $199.99, bedroom sets from $399.99, dining sets from $299.99, and more. Free food, prizes, and fun all weekend long at our Chantilly Court Furniture Clearance Center at 13946 Lee Jackson Memorial Highway, or go online at courtclearancefurniture.com.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer odor control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty! Dude.